everybody, and welcome to another wonderful episode of Tech Can't Save Us. This episode, Control Alt Heal. Yeah, how's that for an episode title?
Boom.
How excited are you? Tech, mental health, mental tech, all, like it's all coming in this episode.
I'm Sabina Serrano.
And I'm Paul David. And if you're listening, please don't forget to like, subscribe, and share.
And I am Rebecca Hedman. And on today's episode, we will be delving into a topic that Will did sum up for us quite in the beginning. So let's go ahead and get into it.
I guess mental health is something that is at the core of what it means to be human, essentially, and how we be productive in our workplace, to how we manage our relationships. And I think we'll be looking at it through a tech industry lens. So how has it affected our workforce's mental health? And in this digital era, the way it's changed how we're approaching and understanding mental health.
Later in the pod, we'll be hearing from Ashley Tennant, the founder and CEO of More Happy. It's a great conversation. We're very excited to bring her onto the pod. And it was a fantastic in-studio interview. So yeah, stay on and listen to that bit.
Awesome. Let's kick off the topic. And maybe before we jump in, kind of have a bit of a chat about the connection between excessive technology use and mental health. So yeah, I mean, I'd love to just know from y'all, like what do you see as the kind of connection between tech and mental health? And what's been your experience of that in your day-to-day life?
Well, for my job, I'm on my technology constantly. Sometimes it does feel as though I am always on my screen. I don't know if anyone else can relate. And I think it comes to a point where you have to kind of switch off from time to time. But essentially, it is necessary for me to carry out my day to day. So I know that I have to just have that balance of using tech in the right way and switching off when I need to, and so I don't get to that point of burnout. Does anyone else feel that way?
Working in social media, you feel like you're exposed to a lot and you're thinking about it constantly. But I also think you tend to, sometimes this conversation falls into a binary of good attention, bad attention, good mental health, bad health. And so I think it's just so much more nuanced than that. But I don't think some conversations allow for that nuance. It's like, this is good screen time, this is bad screen time. Like, this is, you know, good for your brain, this is bad for your brain. And I think this conversation just needs to evolve a bit more to consider, like, technology is a part of our life now. So how do we balance it and manage it better? Not just it's this binary of on or off.
First thing I'll say is that in terms of excessive technology use and mental health, I see it in my sleep patterns. So just like trying to pry myself away from like a, you know, TV screen or a phone screen at the end of the night and really like carve out that time to kind of like wind down. But on the positive side, like I, you know, use a tool like Oura Ring, and you know, it actually prompts me to kind of start the wind down process at a certain time. And so if I'm in the app looking at how my day's been, okay, then I'll turn on a meditation. So really appreciate tech that kind of nudges you to be a bit more gentle with your human body and step away from the tech, or just remind you of like overuse and how it can affect you.
Yeah, I think the difference between kind of like using tech that's good for you and tech that's been designed to just be addictive, and like the recognizing those, it's like food. It's not food's fault that people get fat. It's like, eat the right food. There's tech. If you spend 5 hours on Instagram looking at other people and they're like talking about how great their life is, it's going to bum you out. If you spend the same amount of time looking at like the profiles of poets and activists, you're probably going to have a really nice experience. One of the things I definitely think is something to of concern about the tech industry is its approach to mental health and the people that actually are creating this tech. I do think, you know, we seeing this report from the BIMA, 52% of tech workers have suffered from anxiety or depression at some point, and that people working in tech are 5 times more likely to be depressed than the UK average. That's terrifying. And it's not only terrifying, but for us all as an agency that serves the tech industry, also deeply depressingly not surprising. I think for even the companies we know that are run well with people that truly care about mental health, there is something about the tech space that just moves so quickly and is so frightening. How do we try and sort of get out of this quite scary sort of hamster wheel where it feels like a lot of folk in that are building these products and are having a really horrible time and burning out hard?
I definitely think, and this is why it was really good to be able to have Ashley come on later and talk, I think companies like More Happy, as well as offering things like coaching and mentoring on an individual and company-wide basis, what they are actually doing, and shout out to Ashley on this one, you're actually getting a company which is minimizing the stigma on mental health. And I think that that's a great place to start. Well, the fact that you're even bringing this conversation to the table and we're able to sit down as an agency and talk about this, we are bringing down the stigma. And I think that that's a really large part of it, especially in these tech startups and tech companies.
Yeah, I mean, have a coaching culture, you know, is one big one. And provide for that with a program like More Happy. I thought this report from AppDynamics stating that 8 out of 10 tech professionals indicate their jobs have become more complex since the pandemic. Like, how do you help employees deal with that? So upskilling has to be a part of that. And obviously, an employee can talk to a coach if they feel the need to help navigate the complexity that their job is taking on board. Maybe have a 4-day work week, throwing that out there. That really helps, I think, to promote.
If you don't know, listeners, we have a 4-day work week.
And everyone loves
and
it.
And everyone fucking loves it.
And people's mental health is better, arguably. But yeah, so, and also I think just like having leaders, to your point, Rebecca, like that show empathy for that in the workplace and kind of lead by modeling. Are they getting coaching themselves? Are they talking about their mental health, talking about, those sorts of topics? I think that's really important as well.
Yeah, and I think when it comes to specifically the complexities of working in the tech world, I think a lot of time you're at the forefront of a lot of ethical conversations that are happening like in the wider public, like you're seeing this in AI. Like, imagine you've been working at an AI company for the past 10 years and now all of a sudden you've got immense amount of attention on your practice and what you're doing, and you're just kind of, well, I've been doing this for ages now. But I think a lot of the time tech workers at the forefront of popular discourse, of kind of a lot of backlash, a lot of big questions that are being asked about society at the time. And that's a big burden to be taken on if you're just trying to get on with your day-to-day as well. And so what support systems and like kind of transparency is available in the workspace to have those nuanced conversations, to have that back and forth and questioning around, what kind of product do we want to be making here? What kind of service do we want to be giving users?
And then there's this interesting stat here from Open Source in Mental Illness that says 71% report reduced productivity due to mental health. So I think if this is not addressed in this tech industry, we will see productivity going down, and innovation is the core of tech industry. So if we aren't addressing mental health and it is causing the workforce to have reduced productivity, then we will see efficiency going down as well. So I think that it helps companies to address it on a productive front as well, because you don't want your workers to be burning out, bummed out, and not being their best self.
Yeah, I think generally companies now have to take a more active role in their employees' mental health than they ever have done before. Mm. And people are sensitive. It's difficult conversations to have. And quite often as a leader, you're like, man, I'm good at building websites. Like, why am I chatting to my employee about the mental health? So like, but you just have to overcome that and accept, whether you like it or not, both from a moral and from a business perspective, if you don't start prioritizing your team's mental health, they'll burn out, they'll be less productive, and you won't have a business model. So yeah, how do you have those awkward conversations? How do you use tools like More Happy, where you maybe, if you don't have the necessary tools to equip it, someone else can facilitate those conversations? It just is what it is. And like, I think sadly, quite a lot of the progress we've seen has actually come from business motives of just like, shit, if I keep this person productive, it'll mean more for the bottom line. But it is what it is. We'll take what we can get. That is just where we are. And any company that isn't investing in their employees' mental health is in tech, I think, probably fucked long term. So yeah.
I think you're seeing like a cultural shift as well. Like, a lot of companies got used to like churning and burning through employees, and they have this constant crop of like youthful folks coming up who don't mind. And also this frame of like, oh, like in your 20s, you're just gonna absolutely get just hammered by whatever company you're with, and like your mental health's gonna take a hit, and you're not gonna have time for anything else. And like, that's not great. Like, that's not how you should spend your 20s. So I think companies are starting to realize, they're seeing pushback from employees who don't want to come back into the office. They want to work remotely because it's better for their mental health. There's accessibility issues there. So like, I'm hopeful that the energy from Gen Z and millennials can kind of keep pressure on these companies to not force people back in the office, to have shorter working weeks, to have more mental health resources in the workplace, and push this change from the ground up. And the good news is tools like More Happy are cropping up to kind of, help them do that and accomplish that,
Yeah, tech employees are taking way less shit. Like, they're just aware of their value, and they will just go to another company if that's what your practice is.
Yeah, and I do think there's like a awareness of the sort of vocabulary that you have now around even the words like burnout. Like, being able to recognize what that is and put a label to it is like extremely powerful in helping you take control back as well. And so making sure organizations and like leaders have that vocabulary as well to start noticing it, start noticing patterns, and trying to be able to like put the fixes in place earlier, I think is a big step forward we've seen.
On that point, like, what do you actually think are some of the biggest drivers of burnout, of mental health issues that we're seeing in the tech industry and just wider throughout society?
I do think in the past 3 years, the impact of COVID-19 is kind of immeasurable at the moment, the way it's affected people, the increase of stress and anxiety and being in a confined space and the kind of isolation and not really knowing what's happening next. I think just the impact that that has had on people's burnout rates has been, like I said, I think immeasurable. I think we're still seeing the effects of it. We're still understanding what it's done to us and what it's doing to us, and the effects of that is not going to be seen for a long time. And so I'm curious when we're able to look back and say in like 10 years time, and we're going to have like immense amount of research and like how that has changed the workforce. Like, you've really seen it in the shift from, as Paul said, from kind of in-person working to remote working, and how that's, you know, COVID-19 really pushed forward that move, whether we wanted it or not. But I also think it also pushed through a lot of, unfortunately, like mental health cases kind of came to the surface because there was no other outlet that people had.
It would be impossible to get the statistic, but I would love to know the percentage of PhD dissertations that are currently being written on something to do with COVID. Mm. Like, I bet it's like literally half.
I think there's also going to be a lot of fringe shows about COVID, like being trapped in lockdown.
The crop with like, of really like 6 out of 10 sitcoms we've got on our way about.
Yeah. We've got one MacBook charger between the six of us. Where does this go? Held in a studio in Dalston.
Written by AI.
Oh, yes. What about you guys? Do you think there's any other kind of key causes or trends that you've seen towards around mental health issues?
I definitely think that there's been a shift in people's careers in terms of the amount of technology and the kind of way that they've moved to digital. I think that many industries pre-COVID weren't digitalized in that way. Even just from my own personal career and how that's been changed, I'm definitely more exposed to social media now, and I see that there are a lot of other industries, finance as well, which is one that never used to really be so particularly like digitalized. I think that that shift where everybody's now like on social media in their careers and in their personal life has definitely increased mental health troubles.
For me, I think it's the like two things. The one, the sedentary lifestyles that I think a lot of tech promotes, and like we've, you know, not really, I've seen these like ridiculous like run or walk while you type at your desks like setups and stuff like that. I'm not really on board with it. I'm open to try anything. I'll try once. But I think that's one, like if sitting truly is the new smoking, I think that's a little bit overstated, but we need to figure out a way to have more balance in people's work days and just overall lives and stuff like that. And then the other piece I think is like there's got to be a big reckoning around like the anti-social nature of social media sometimes. Mm. And like how it's disconnected people from each other, and having just like sort of, you know, everyday conversations that ironically could actually help you with those feelings of depression and social isolation that you feel on social media. This, you know, stat about Gen Z, you know, that like 56% of them have experienced more intense social isolation, you know, due to COVID-19 and generally being engaged in social media as a quote unquote replacement of that, you know, human interaction that they would have otherwise had. Like, really am concerned about, you know, future generations like ability to interact with each other in like collaborative and healthy ways.
Mm. I think unfortunately the pandemic has actually made much of the population much more like the tech industry was previously, where, you know, you used to 9 to 5 check out. I am not thinking about work until I'm at work the next day. I mean, obviously not always the case depending on what you do, but that's generally the experience. Whereas now, okay, sweet, everyone's remote, but you're on your phone constantly. Your phone is no longer just a source of joy, it's also a source of work. And it's very easy to wake up at 8 a.m., work until 6 or 7 p.m., then just switch over to your phone onto YouTube or Netflix or whatever, or go onto your laptop and have this terminally online life where you realize, like, I woke up at 8, I've been on a screen from 8 till I've gone to sleep, and like that's basically been my day, and God forbid that's basically been my week. So I think like there does have to be, to the point we were making earlier about the mental health of employees being more and more the responsibility of employers, I think every employer needs to work like its arse off to not only give employees the right to be offline, but actually force them to be offline.
Yeah, and like not only has that being absorbed from the tech industry into other industries, you've kind of got like agile methodologies and sprints, and the way like tech is produced and created, that's been adopted by so many industries now as well. And like this kind of move fast, break things. Mm. But you know, that ideology is kind of seeped over from Silicon Valley into all the other industries that are now, everyone needs to be a data company, everyone needs to run sprints.
Like the fetishization of like hey, I work 70 hour weeks yes. on content sprints and stuff. And it's like, it's so unhelpful. Like it, when I always think of myself as like, I'm not one of these fucking idiots who like sits on Instagram and buys stuff from influencers. And then I'll spend like an hour on LinkedIn seeing other agency owners talk about how great their agency's going. And I'll be like, oh, well, I feel really sad now. Like because I don't think my agency's going as well as those agency owners. And that fetishization of work culture and overworking and content sprints and everything. Yeah, definitely affects my mental health negatively.
Yeah, 100%. And this idea that that makes us more productive, that makes us better, and this competition kind of arises and everything should be a competition about who can get the biggest numbers. I think that all has infected us from Silicon Valley, like 2000s kind of thinking, and is kind of so ubiquitous. I think it's hard for us to notice it now.
Yeah, it's definitely the water we're swimming in.
Something I've noticed from spending 70% of my life on LinkedIn is that there are a lot of influencers who claim to have a specialty, and I wonder sometimes if they're actually good at what they do or if they are just good influencers. So we're kind of clouded now because we don't know who is actually like great at their jobs or who is just actually like good at social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that is such an important distinction to make in the mental health realm. Mm. Like there are people who are like professionally trained, like mental health is an incredibly nuanced and really delicate subject, as we've discussed here. But going on social media, and you can talk about your own personal mental health, and that might help people, and that's fine. But creating a whole persona around only your lived experiences and saying, I'm an expert in mental health kind of arenas and giving out people advice, is just quite a dangerous road to like go down. Whereas there are people who are trained, who have like, you know, degrees and, you know, certain qualifications in order for them to actually be like a professional service. But you don't need a professional qualification to be a mental health advocate online. But and that leads to like dissemination of really dangerous information sometimes, yeah. And like, you know, misdiagnoses or self-diagnosis for no reason.
Or just one school of thought that gets projected as this works for everyone, and like it doesn't. You know, like traditional Freudian therapy works for some people. I fucking hated it. Other people really resonate with CBT. It's like you try the stuff until you find what works for the individual. When you have an Instagram influencer telling you, if you have these three things, you'll solve your life. If you then do it and it doesn't solve your life problems, you get way more depressed.
Yeah. You think that something's wrong with you.
Yeah.
It's individualizing the problem.
Yeah.
I think too, as we transition the conversation to talking about sort of technology improving and aiding things, I think there's also a role for government and legislation. Mm-hmm. I want to keep always bringing us back to like the importance of good policy as it relates.
Regulation horn.
Yeah, like regulation. and wow, that sounds.
I feel like that was me.
Yeah. No, but it's important. Like you look back at, you know, in 2017, France passed this like right to disconnect law. You know, it only applies to companies with 50 or more people. But, you know, they're tackling, as the French do, they're very good at tackling work-life balance issues. And they're also one of the most productive, if not the most productive economies in Europe. Just fun fact. They're realizing that the line between work and life was starting to blur. And they, you know, sort of passed this law in 2017, I believe it was. And it was a part of a larger package that in some ways made it both easier and harder for French companies to hire and fire workers. They're working on reducing the country's unemployment rate. But I think, you know, as we move into this era, we're starting to realize that these, you know, technology platforms are so ubiquitous and they seep into every part of our lives that we kind of do need like, an outside force, like a third party, like the government to say, maybe we should start regulating these folks like public utilities, or maybe we should start, you know, just putting barriers between the workplace and the individual that won't naturally spring up from the invisible hand of the market.
And if you're a company that actually cares about it, just fucking Google it. Like generally, there's so many tactics you can deploy immediately to it's like, oh, it's a problem that's insurmountable. It isn't. Like if you are the HR department of some large tech company, you can fix a lot of this shit like within a month if you put in certain company policies. So, you know, consider yourself empowered to go through and tackle it as well, because unfortunately, yeah, totally agree, Paul. We need legislation, but it won't come in the UK anytime soon. So take it upon yourself between now and then.
Yeah, and I think it's about how you leverage company culture to help the individuals as well. So like what the internet is really good at is finding people who think like you. So whether that's flat earthers or people who like certain animes, like you'll be able to find those people very easily. If you're not able to provide them extra support, it's just really thinking about, you know, what sort of online support groups are there that you could signpost them to. Is there ones that you could, you know, form within your organization? If you're larger, you know, is there like queer support networks that you could create just for your employees who are queer? Or is there kind of other subgroups that you can kind of form and help people, whether that's online or offline? But I think technology can help you kind of find more people in those networks, especially if you're remote working. But I definitely think community groups are really important part of this as well.
Would love to know what are your three's like favorite kind of things that a company can do using tech to solve some of the issues that have unfortunately been created by tech.
I have an app on my Google Chrome called Break Time, and every 45 minutes it takes over my screen and plays a ding ding ding, please step away from your screen. Do I always listen to it? Maybe. Do I ignore it sometimes? Probably. But it is a healthy reminder, going back to, you know, if we're sitting down all the time, how do we just like kind of shake up your patterns of working to be able to get you to move away?
I'm kind of old school. I have a therapist, and during COVID we did Zoom, and then after COVID we resumed our face-to-face. It works for me, but yeah, I'm open to the idea of online mentoring and coaching.
And on the digital therapy as well, like a personal therapist can sometimes be a little, like, you can find cost-effective ones, but like it tends to be a little more expensive. Like there are also really good platforms like BetterHelp where you can get, like, you know, it's still not nothing, but it's far more affordable than therapy's ever really been before. So do have a look at those. Like,
it's not cheap.
I'm lucky enough to be able to afford my own therapist, who I would, you know, he'd be one of the very last things that went, if my life would have to be going real bad. But if I was where I was now, like 5 years ago, I'd absolutely use something like BetterHelp to get access to that kind of support.
Yeah. I think mine would have to be, I think wearables actually, that's been, I think, a big game changer for me, is like tracking my sleep a bit better with Oura Ring. You can do it with other tools like Apple Watch and Whoop. But also, I think I saw actually at Whoop, they have like a special employee benefit where if you meet like 100% of your sleep goals or something like that, you get like $100 bonus or something like that. So like, okay, some of that can be a little paternalistic and a little like, I don't know. But I like the spirit of it, if not the practice of it, of like... kind of like, hey, like we're gonna, you know, we're not tracking you, but we're also, you know, encouraging you, and we're tying it to like, we're giving you some sort of benefit at work, and we're recognizing that you're making an effort.
I think all these things, like, you know, they're all different techniques for all of us. And I think, you know, you can find your own combination of what works for you. Like, this isn't, all these techniques aren't gonna work for everyone. The same way in the room, they're not all gonna work for us. So I think that's what it comes down to at the end of the day, just like being able to support them and signpost and give resources where you can, but don't expect everyone to do everything, because that won't work.
And making it part of some, like, your HR team's remit, because this is the sort of thing that your HR team is probably just thinking like, okay, we do contracts, like we, you know, we do surveys. Being like, you know, if you want to offer digital therapy, see how it affects our team productivity over the next 6 months, and then implement that into the company culture. It's quite often something that might not be on their radar. And wearables, meditation apps, telehealth, you know, these, you have to put it on the table for your team, offer it to your employees, see what the pickup rate is, but just have a much wider idea of what, in, you know, human resources and wellness entails, because I think people do get a little too stuck in their sort of like siloed view of this is how we've always done it. But, you know, if you give everyone Oura Rings or, you know, Apple Watches or whatever, and it improves the amount they're walking and their better sleep, I promise you it will make their lives better and will improve the productivity of their work. So how you make that a mission of the company is up to you, but it is something you should do, and it will have big impact.
I'm interested to know, Will, as a founder, and you as well, Paul, was there a moment where you guys realized like mental health is seriously important for the team? Was it a personal realization, or was there something that happened like in the agency that where you realized like, actually mental, we need to start putting this emphasis on mental health? Because I feel like as founders, it's something that you guys actually do quite well, and there's something to be learned there for like other founders.
Two things. One, we started the agency in the middle of the pandemic, which is arguably one of the broadest, largest mental health, global mental health crisis, as well as a physical health crisis. So I think it was top of mind, you know, for that reason, that we need to like build that in, and just saw a lot of our peers and folks struggling at that moment. And then two, I think Will and I both came in with like, we had been practiced in therapy and coaching, and, you know, specifically myself coming from like an education background, where I've been through so many coaching and education, you talk about your feelings all the time and how they affect the kids and, you know, your colleagues, and I'm really grateful for that. So you kind of come in with that mentality of like embedding it into the work culture a bit more. So
I think as well, just like for both of us, having worked in tech and agency worlds previously, maybe didn't start as like, oh, we want to like offer all these employees at platforms. It was more just like, we've seen how it's done badly and we don't want to do that. And so when you come across something where it's like, hey, we can give affordable coaching to every one of your team members for like 40 quid per member a month, you're like, yeah, sold, that's incredible. So it's recognizing the good tech when it comes across your inbox and going, well, yeah, that's a really good idea. And you know, I ultimately, my end goal is I want my employees to be happy. I want them to be the opposite of some of the tech cultures that I've seen. How do I do that? And you discover more stuff as you grow as a founder, as you hire a wonderful HR person, as we have in Melanie, who understands stuff like that and can recommend things. So yeah, it's kind of just starts from that. And unfortunately, where I think actually a lot of mental health and bad cultures come from, which is the C-suite's position is, we want to squeeze as much out of our team and we don't really give a fuck about their feelings. And that's what kind of creates a toxic work culture. Whereas if you start from the other place, you kind of just gravitate towards the tech and systems that's going to help facilitate that.
One of the ways that we've actually tried to help our team at Literal Humans is by employing a service called More Happy, straight to the point, does what it says on the tin. It's a digital mentoring tool that helps employees improve skills and access coaching, so they get, you know, one-to-one coaching opportunities, and it's all paid for ideally by their employer. So yeah, we're a bit biased because that's what we use, and I've got my great coach Srishti, who's just awesome. Shout out to Srishti. And yeah, we're happy to welcome the founder and CEO of More Happy, Ashley Tennant, onto the show right now to chat with us about all the great work they're doing. We are joined by Ashley Tennant, the founder and CEO of More Happy. Should note that More Happy is actually a partner of Literal Humans. Our team uses More Happy coaches to improve their well-being in the workplace. And so, yeah, we're very excited to have a partner organization on the podcast today. Welcome, Ashley.
Thank you. Great to be here.
First things first, we'd love you to just introduce yourself to the audience and just give our listeners a bit more insight into More Happy and what you've built.
I started started a business 3 years ago called More Happy. It's a coaching platform that makes coaching affordable to everyone for the first time ever. Background of me, product and marketing for tech startups. I've always worked in tech since leaving university, obsessed by it. And really sort of over the years started becoming more passionate about tech for good and more mission driven businesses. I think what led me here, I guess over time I had always wondered if I'd ever start my own business and had that sort of question hanging over me, but I had never been, sounds ridiculous to say, I'd never been passionate about anything specific before, but I guess I knew to do this, it's such an intense experience that you have to live and breathe it. And I had never come across a thing yet. So 3 years ago, I did. And here I am.
Do you have a co-founder or is just you a solo founder?
It's just me and the team. We have an incredible team around us. And a lot of the team joined very early stages. So it feels like we've really done this together.
That's good. So you have like a founding team. And exactly. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how people do it as solo founders. I don't, you know, what I've done without Will. But yeah, that's... it's a big undertaking, so congrats on that.
What was it about coaching that made you think, yeah, this is the one, this is the thing, I'm going to live and breathe this, and it's worth the incredible pain of starting a company?
Sure. So I guess a lot of reasons that came together. Early in my career, I worked for a company called WGSN, which is now the largest trend forecaster in the world. And I moved into my first sort of senior position, I guess, within the organization. And I came up against challenges, as you do, first-time manager. I didn't know how to handle. And I had an experience where I just could see no way forward with it. And I had this incredible manager at the time. She was a director. She's actually now an advisor and More Happy. But she said to me, you know, you should speak to a coach. And I was like, what the hell is a coach? I have no idea what a coach would even do. She said, just trust me, I'm going to get you this coach. She's amazing. She was called Yasmin El-Dabi, and she transformed everything for me in just a few sessions. And things that I couldn't find a way through, she just used questioning techniques and frameworks, and together we got through it, and it was incredible. So I guess, mind blown by that, I went on to work at other startups. Of course, there was no budget for coaching. They were earlier stage, so it just wasn't possible. And got on with my career, did what I did. And then eventually I thought, actually, I'm going to give this coaching thing a go. So I trained as a coach. You know, I had this sort of dream of, you know, I'll do yoga in the morning and I'll maybe do a session or
maybe two during the day, and I'll live this lovely life as coaches do, and that will be it. But what I actually discovered through training to be a coach is that, first of all, coaching is only for certain people. So it's so expensive to get a coach that it can only be for the chosen few. As we know, people at the top, it's not the most diverse place. So it just felt like this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy that you were giving people with privilege more privilege. So I was really irked by that. Didn't know how to solve it. And then on the other side, what I noticed is that coaches were failing. So 95% of coaches actually come through their training and don't make it. And it just seemed such a shame. I was like, you know, it's the most transformational thing ever. Yet people on one side can't get it and people on the other side are struggling. So it felt like a sort of obvious business model. But you still wasn't quite ready to land it yet. I was like, I don't know how to solve this. And then the pandemic hit. And I had a coaching session, as you do. I'm fully immersed in coaching. I didn't have to solve it myself. I turned to my coach and this incredible woman called Jackie Green. And she asked me this question that I will never, ever forget. She said, "What is it you're worried about?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know what to do in this situation of the pandemic. We're going into lockdown. I was about to start homeschooling. Oh, I've all been there." And she said, "Well, when do you feel good?" And I said, "When I'm doing something useful." She said, "Well, what would be useful right now?" And I said, "Well," thought for a few moments, "well, I feel, you know, I could put together a team of coaches to help people in need." So she said, "Okay, well, why don't you do that?" And that's what I did. So very quickly, we had this team of coaches and we were coaching key workers, people whose their businesses were going down. They were struggling. They didn't know where to turn. And we had over 100 coaches all just supporting and helping. And, you know, no one was making any money. It wasn't a business. It was just doing something useful. But out of it, a business model emerged that actually people on one side really needed it and wanted it at all different levels. And then on the other side, the coaches were able to gain the practice that they needed to go on and be successful. And that's where More Happy was born.
That's amazing. I'm really interested in this idea of how you're opening up who coaching is for. Like, it's not just for, as you said, like the privilege, helping the privilege. So it'd be great just to hear how your organization like keeps that at the core of what it does and how it does open up coaching to more people.
So the traditional model for coaching was, you know, as I say, those at the top, only the few. It tended to be people in the situation I described at the beginning where I got my coach. You know, something became so bad and so toxic that then the coach gets brought in. So that was the old model. The new model, which is through More Happy, is that we provide coaching for everyone across the team, all levels, whether you're the intern or the CEO and everyone in between. It's unlimited, so you can call on it whenever you need, hopefully in a proactive way, so that, you know, you're not waiting till things get so bad that they can't be dealt with. And we cover coaching, you know, for every area of life. So it's not just about, you know, becoming an exec coach. It's about, you know, we have parenting coaches. We have coaches there to help you with your relationships. And that can be your relationships at home or with your family. We have coaches that can help you with burnout, anxiety, overwhelm, becoming a first-time manager and all the challenges around that. So every aspect is covered. And it means that, you know, you can access a coach whenever you need one, during the day, evenings, weekends, just by booking a link. So it's a completely different model.
And I'd like to really highlight like the importance that it can have to a team. Victoria, one of our senior writers, we were on our weekly check-in call today. Like, I know Victoria had a shit week last week, just from some stuff that happened with our clients and workload and stuff. And we were like, all right, everyone does one win from the week. And then like any red flags if they need support that week. And her win from the week was that she'd found an awesome coach on More Happy that had really helped her through some of those issues that she was facing that week. And, you know, she like... full disclosure, there is no world in which we would offer coaching to every single one of our team members if it wasn't for a service like More Happy. Like, Victoria's brilliant. She's a content writer. That's not a role you would normally think like, oh, I'll put a coach, but like as if burnout doesn't apply like to a writer the same way it applies to a C-suite executive. So it is only through something like More Happy that makes it more accessible that we would have ever be able to give it to our full team, and Victoria could have that moment of transformation. So yeah, just to underline so much of what you're saying there and the mission that you're drive you guys.
Thank you. I think there's an incredible fact, a McKinsey, a very important fact from McKinsey, that apparently 40% of your team, not your team, hopefully, but all of our teams, apparently 40% are looking to leave within the next 3 to 6 months. And that's terrifying. And it's not 40% of the C-suite, it's 40% across the whole team. And, you know, as you say, it is applicable to everyone. Everyone deserves that help and support and that equal right to growth. Mm.
Savina, Rebecca, which one of you is it?
Which one of you are currently leaving? Calls out. God, please.
Sorry, guys. Yeah, there's something so powerful when you find that right coach. Like you mentioned, Yasmin, was it?
Yeah.
And just like how that helpful connection with that coach has helped you level up. And I found that with Srishti, who's been amazing and just like really has helped, you know, take my, you know, management leadership to the next level and help me like kind of see around corners there. So like really, that's been a powerful relationship and I'm really grateful for that. So
good to hear. I think one of my most, the reason we do what we do and what really keeps our team going is that we get notifications of the feedback that people are leaving for our coaches. And our coaches are there to help people, but they're also there to improve. So the way our business model works is that in the background, they're taking part in a coach career accelerator. Bit of background about coaching that most people don't know is that not only you go through your training, which is a very costly exercise and it takes a long time, but you then have to get your first 100 hours. To become a master coach, you need 2,500 hours. So they're on this path to getting, you know, accrue these hours to get their different accreditation levels. So that's what they're there for. They're there for the experience. They're there to get the feedback and they're there to help, which is amazing. But when we see the feedback that's being left for those coaches, it just gives them a boost. It's just, it's wonderful. It's wonderful to see the change that happens. And we measure it. It's approximately 60% happier that people leave a session feeling. So it's such a transformation and such an easy win for a business to give it to their entire team.
It's a model as well we're kind of seeing in a few other spaces, like using tech to make something that used to be quite niche and elitist more mass market through stuff like BetterHelp. Like how is the tech side of things? How are you ensuring, like, because not, you know, quite often coaching was like a one-on-one, almost like a business therapy session. How are you using tech to kind of keep that intimacy while still delivering at scale?
So we use tech to, so we're, you know, we would always say more happy, more human. So it's always about the human first. And we're there to help people on all sides. So the person being coached and the coach. So we see tech as an enabler for that, as opposed to replace it in any way. We use tech to obviously track how people found it so that we can give feedback to the coaches and improve their experience. We use tech to provide a seamless experience of people getting to the calls, having those calls. Everything that happens on the call is confidential. So we still keep that as that intimate space between the two people. One of our major challenges, which we might talk about a bit later, but just to bring it up now, one of the major challenges that we had is that launching coaching to everyone was a completely new concept. So much in the same way as I didn't know what a coach was, most other people don't know what a coach is and what it can do for them unless you've been in that leadership position. So we're now using tech to educate and, you know, really bring people up to speed with what it can do so that they can take advantage of it.
I think that's been one of the stickier points for us, is like just getting, you know, and not that you necessarily need to have your entire team, you know, onboarded into coaching. And some people have outside, you know, counselors and therapists and stuff like that. So maybe they feel like coaching is, you know, a bit extra, but like, how do you work through the sticky point of like, okay, a company's signed up to More Happy Now. How do we get their team on board with it and like get those individual enrollments? Because that's something we find a lot with like B2B businesses, is they come to us and they're like, great, I've put out the word and, you know, I've got a client, but I need the client's team to sign on to this. So
I guess we've learned over time. I wouldn't say we've perfected this yet, but we've learned over time that when we launch to a business, we're effectively going in cold to everyone else. So just because the company was really excited, it doesn't mean that everybody else is already on board with it. So it's almost like we go back to zero, and then we have a whole education program of what is coaching? Why is it different to therapy? Why is it different to mentoring? Why it's potentially more powerful for you and how to use it. I think a lot of people overthink it, to be honest. Effectively, it's a really productive chat that you're having with someone, and that's all you need to know. It's not that you you know, you don't have to prepare particularly in any way. All you need is a starting point. The coach does the rest and they'll be, you know, asking you questions. So just coming with the right mindset and having a starting point is all you need. And the rest is sort of magic.
Sort of magic's a good tagline. That's nice.
Sort of magic.
Yeah.
You feel it once you've done it. I think the thing that I love is seeing people switch from, I'm not sure that's for me, and being a bit suspect about it as if there's something happening. And then at the end, they're like, oh, yeah, I get it. And just the shift that happens. Mm. And then once you know what it's like, it's almost like you're never alone again. Mm. Because you know that there's always someone that will help you with all of your problems and whenever they appear.
Is there any other part of the journey that people go on that you're really kind of, that gets you a bit excited, or like any particular moments or stories that you kind of remember of being like, ah, oh, that light bulb moment was really special that I was able to be part of it?
Yeah, I think, I mean, to be honest, it's pretty consistent that the feedback that comes through every day, it's just like, yes, another win, another win. There was one in particular that I've heard where somebody said, I've been struggling with this problem for years and I've never known what to do with it. And I had a 45-minute session with a more happy coach and it's gone. I now know, like, just complete clarity, energized, able to move forward, able to put the past in the past. And just when you hear things like that, it just makes everything worthwhile. We've also helped a lot of people that are neurodiverse, and it's really helped them to, you know, find tactics, way of communicating their needs to their team, moving them forward. So we've had a lot of shout outs actually on LinkedIn about how much it's helped them. So that's amazing as well.
Yeah, you touched on neurodiversity, and we understand that, you know, DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, is like a big part of what you do and also the coaching industry in general. I mean, I came into coaching with having specific experiences with past counselors and therapists, and had a sense that I wanted a coach from like a diverse background. So that was really important to me as a consumer, and was happy to find one on there. So, but yeah, we'd just love to hear, you know, anything else that y'all are doing in terms of like practices or initiatives around diversity, equity, and inclusion, and how it's kind of like embedded as a bedrock value for more happy.
Yes. So, I mean, the very fact that the business is there to give everyone equal opportunity is, you know, built in from the beginning. In terms of coaches, that's something that we're always trying to make sure that we are representing as many groups as possible. Interestingly, we found it a challenge in the beginning, possibly because I always sort of put it down to, you have to have experienced coaching to want to become a coach. And by the very nature, if you're only coaching those at the top, and that's not a diverse place, you're almost like creating the problem within. So we've done a lot of outreach specifically to try and make sure that we are representative. We're also, we provide free training for our coaches every month as well. So we're also, you know, we've got plans in the next year, we're coaching more coaches so that they can help more neurodiverse people. We're looking at doing menopause coaching so we can support in those areas more. So just really, how do we add value to the coaches so that they can then go on and take those skills elsewhere, but also how do we help those within the organizations with challenges that are there, and, you know, everyone has them.
I'd love to know personally the, like, what's the journey's been like for you? Like, you know, it's 3 years in, it's still pretty like new and exciting. What have kind of been some of the biggest learnings? This problem that you see as a societal wide problem, you want to fix it, you come up with a solution for it. What's that journey been like? And any advice you'd give to anyone else in a similar position who's having that light bulb moment of like, I'm really passionate about this and I want to use tech to try and solve it?
First of all, to describe, it's almost impossible to describe the journey. I think if I knew what I was getting myself into at the beginning. So maybe it's best not to know would be the advice. Yeah. Just get started. Yeah. And I think, yeah, don't overthink it, but start going in the direction of what it is and not being too tied to any idea. Just keep going, keep testing, keep working through it. I guess what have I learned is that nothing is as you expect it to be. And no matter how idealist your views are, there will be people constantly telling you that that's not going to work and that your idea isn't valid. And, you know, we've had dark moments. We've had great moments. It's just embrace it. Like any startup, there's moments where you think, oh, this isn't going to work. Or when we launched, we didn't have any money. I didn't have any money. So it's like, how do you get something off the ground with nothing? We had moments when we thought we had to, you know, it's just like any startup, there's so many challenges. But I think the keep going and don't give up is just ingrained in me. And also, I think, do it with people around you that can help you. And we're a coaching business. So knowing that we're surrounded by people that can support all those, you know, every decision that we have to make, if we want to sense check it, or, you know, we've got a problem that we can't solve, just look outwards for people that can help you. And that's, yeah, it's been really nice.
Did your background in product and marketing help throughout the founder journey?
Yes, because I would say it's enabled me to look across the business. Apparently one of my superpowers is, I say one, I don't know if I've got any more, but I'll say one, is that I'm good at joining dots. So I'm able to sort of see things from a product perspective, but then I can think, okay, you know, how would I market that? How would that? So I guess I can fast track quite a lot in my head just by having worked across those two areas. And I also, the product side, essentially what we're doing is productizing a coaching experience. So being able to visualize how that might look or work in the future has really helped.
Your experience as a coach as well, like, you know that process, you learned, you went through the courses, so you've got that experience to bring to life as well.
Exactly. And I think also really understanding what it's like from a coach, the coach's perspective of what it's like to go through the training, find the practice hours. I completely understand why most coaches give up. It's really hard. So I'm able to empathize on all sides, I suppose.
Yeah, I feel like that connecting the dots skill is a very important one for a founder, co-founder, like constantly just trying to like see around corners and think, okay, is the team making the connection here that they need to and things like that. It's yeah, I just see it a lot in our work of just like, hey, you know, is sales talking to marketing? Is marketing talking to the content team? Are they really capitalizing on opportunities to like kind of bring the business together and make it more cohesive? And that's the, you know, the helpful bit about your vantage point where you are. But like, I think you have to really commit yourself to doing that and thinking that through with your team. And I think building their capacity to do it themselves. So I think that's another important aspect there. Coaching.
Yeah. It's funny. We had someone I used to work with actually joined us in a meeting, like a sort of workshop with the team. And he left. He said, wow, it's really different being in a company where you're all coaches. Because we were all, you know, framing questions differently, pushing each other a different way, challenging. And it's true. I hadn't really thought about it because we were all just doing it. Mm-hmm. But the difference between working at previous companies where perhaps no one had any coaching experience, because we're definitely able to work in a different way, in a more proactive way.
We've been loving the product and our whole team has, but what are some exciting things coming down the pipe for More Happy? Like any cool plans for the rest of the year in 2024?
So we have a new booking experience coming, which again, going back to this education of really helping people to understand the why they should do it and what they will get from it. So that's really exciting. And we have a weapons grade product designer that's just joined us who she's just fabulous. So she's designed this whole experience, which is great. So that's coming. Lots for the coaches so that they can, obviously we've kind of got two products that we run, one in the background. So it's, you know, how do we help them with their progression? How do we make sure they've got the most amazing community experience where they can support each other and help each other on their coaching journey? So that's coming too.
Yeah. Awesome.
Well, yeah, thank you so much for joining us. It's genuinely been really interesting conversation, and I think you've got some really refreshing thoughts on the industry and where it's going to go. Really excited to see More Happy continue to support people from across the board. And yeah, big congratulations on More Happy reaching over 10,000 coaching sessions. That's so exciting. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Great to be here. Thank you.
And please let our audience know where they can find out more about More Happy.
Sure. So if you visit morehappy.com and you can sign up teams, either individuals or whole teams, and it costs just £39.99 per person, and they'll get unlimited support on whatever areas bothering them.
Bargain. Brilliant. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. As ever, we'd love to hear your feedback on the podcast. You know, we're nothing without our listeners, so please help us shape the future of this podcast by leaving us some quick feedback using the link in our episode description. It's just a really quick survey, but you can also email us at any time at hello@literalhumans.com with thoughts, feedbacks, and any criticism. We're open to it, you know, we can take it. So yeah, catch you next time. Thank you.